Good morning and welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. It's Thursday. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold. And you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. Thanks for tuning in. Next week will be a busy week all the way around for those in the news business, local news business. And I look at this as an opportunity to do better than we did the previous time. It's you trying to improve. We've got three meetings that we are focused on, school board meeting, city commission meeting, Leon County Commission meeting, all next week. A lot of stuff on the docket. And so we're here to get you informed on some things you might not know about if you didn't listen to Above the Fold, stuff that's not covered in the traditional media outlets. And so we'll get started today. So we'll give you an update on sort of what's going on with those meetings. We're going to talk about a couple things that, again, you would not hear about if you weren't or wouldn't know about if you weren't listening to Above the Fold. The second segment, we'll talk about the elections bill. Governor DeSantis signed that, and, you know, it has been heads are exploding across Florida. DeSantis took an approach which was sure to cause that in terms of how he signed the bill, doing exclusive on Fox News, not allowing reporters anywhere near the ceremony. However, what has come out of this is there already have filed lawsuits. Elected officials have called this Jim Crow 2.0. And so we're going to spend the second segment today, which is right after opening here, trying to inform and letting you know exactly what the election bill does. You know, I might even Google Jim Crow just to give you some examples of what Jim Crow was. But, you know, this is Nikki Fried is on this bandwagon. And it's just, look, you can be against it, but I want you to understand exactly what it's doing, why it's happening. And we will reference a grand jury report again from 2014, which doesn't seem to be included in any of the reporting now or today that I've seen, that are just basically saying it's making it harder to vote. And so, anyway, we'll get into that. The third segment, we'll talk a little bit about, again, the school board meeting on Tuesday. Not a lot there, but we will discuss a little bit. I do want to talk about the school system overall. This week, got three phone calls on not tips. I guess they could be considered tips. There are people that are complaining about some things that are going on within the school system. And as I have told you previously, you know, we've got a reporter who's now covering the meetings, watching every meeting. And you know, I think we're doing a very good job of getting stories out. And so I don't know if that's the reason why we're getting more phone calls, because they see us writing more about it. But I hasten to add here that, you know, I've become a believer that, you know, once you've got a system in place for, you know, 20, 30 years, it's very difficult to get things changed. A lot of things happen because they've happened before. This is how we do it. And so, you know, the school system in Leon County is 33,000 students, 4,000 employees, 2,500 teachers. You know, it is a big operation. The school superintendent is elected every 4 years to manage that. And, you know, I've been critical of sort of the status of how the meetings take place way over on the other side of the county, how the agenda items are written up. And listen, that's been going on for years. Not a lot of change there. But I do think it is, if you start looking, I've been involved in this process for a number of years now, and the impact of the education system or the impact of what is done in schools, not just in the classroom, but interactions with teachers, coaches, after-school activities, I think it really defines a community in a lot of different ways. It has an impact on kids that we sometimes don't see. And so because it happens, it doesn't get reported on. And that's both on the good side and the bad side. You know, so we're going to spend a lot of time in the next couple of years covering the school board and the school system. You know, what we'll talk about in the third segment, bottom of the hour, is an investigation at Childs High School of some allegations that were made. And I don't want to get into the specifics of the actual allegations, although we'll talk about those. I'm more interested in sort of the process and how things are laid out. And again, this has probably been the process that's been there for 20 years. But I think that it's as we see more competition coming into the school system, you know, I think it's very important to recognize that students and parents are consumers, and you've got to, like a business, you've got to figure out what they want. You got to figure out how to address their needs. And so we'll talk about that in the bottom of the hour. City Commission is going to have a meeting on Wednesday. I'll dig into that a little bit more on Tuesday, but they're going to be addressing ID cards. I'm not sure what the motivation is this. I'm looking at their item on this. You know, it can't be used to vote. It's a lot of the areas that have the ID card say, yeah, we'll use this if you don't have any other standard forms of ID. So they're going to deal with that. They're going to get a legislative update. That will be pertinent given the session is over. You know, what requests, financial requests, for the most part, did they get met, or, you know, which ones were left on the floor and didn't make it to the governor's desk. They're also going to talk about this North Monroe Quarter committee or board that was set up with the Leon County Commission. They're going to try to get a couple members on there. Because, you know, a lot of this North Monroe issue is in the city. And so they're going to talk about that, probably appoint a couple people, or at least figure out a process to appoint people. Again, that's because of, I guess, the homeless issue was an issue here on North Monroe. It has been mitigated a little bit given what's going on. But now they've got this board together to try to address this. Businesses, I think, were hurt tremendously in this area. We've heard people talk about this as a gateway to Tallahassee, but it's also an area that has pretty high crime numbers. You know, human trafficking has been mentioned in this area. It's a lot different from the Thomasville exit, which is also a gateway. And so I guess this board will be looking at really how to deal with that. So the city's looking to get their voice heard on that, which makes a lot of sense. Like I said, on Tuesday, we'll have a little bit more detail about exactly what's going on at that city commission meeting. And our last segment, we'll talk about the Leon County Commission meeting, which is coming up on Tuesday. Look, they got issues on homeless. They're going to also weigh in on the Election Day paid holiday for workers. We'll get you up to date on that. They've got a Waste Pro update. I'll let you know how they're doing there. And there's this item about improving an intersection at Northwest Capitol Circle Road and Bainbridge, north of town near North Monroe. And I want to read you the analysis that took place on this and the improvements they're making. This is pretty impressive in the sense of how they compared 2 5-year periods on crashes and the impact and what they're going to do to try to fix that. I mean, I think this is local government at its best, looking at these grassroots issues and trying to fix that. And so we'll give you just an update on that. Not an update. We'll give you, you probably haven't heard about it, but we'll tell you what's going to happen and what they hope to accomplish by spending, you know, six figures on an area that has a history of traffic incidents. So we will deal with that. So again, thanks for joining us here on Thursday. And when we get back, we'll deal with the state issue of the elections bill, and then we'll pivot to the school board and the Leon County Commission meeting. So that's our agenda for today. I hope you stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go to Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they do not mark up the cost of stone materials. The way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain, they're not going to charge any made-up fee as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call, 765-2037, 765-2037, and tell them that you heard about them on Above the Fold. All right, let's turn to the elections bill. Well, first thing I want to say, and this is self-serving as all get out, I want everybody to know that, but the coverage that we're getting from the Tallahassee Democrat on the voting bill is just, it's the statewide perspective just regurgitated on their website. And it's a little bit, I hate to use the word disgusting, but it is an insult to anyone's intelligence who is trying to figure out exactly what's going on with this bill. And so, again, I will say the disclaimer is I understand that's self-serving. Coming from someone who owns a newspaper, and well, not owns, but runs a nonprofit who prints a newspaper in town. It's depressing to see what passes as journalism these days. And so we'll get into what's going on here with the elections bill. DeSantis signed the bill today in South Florida. I don't like how he did it, but that's the politics of it. He signed it basically an exclusive to Fox News. And now that gives the mainstream media, the legacy media here in Florida, the opportunity to criticize them for not letting them in. And so, anyway, that was done from a political standpoint. Obviously, he has the issues with the print media, which is what covers him here in the state. And they're biased. It's the most, all you got to do is read this story like I just referenced. It's unbelievably biased. And I think it's done for a reason. So this is the way he gets back. Now, if we get to the meat and potatoes, the elections bill, he signed this bill. This has gone through the legislature. There's been a number of changes made to it to make it better. I say more acceptable in the sense that, you're trying to thread the needle of making sure that you have election integrity, and you also have the ability for people to make it easy for them to vote. I mean, we have turnouts in presidential elections of 80-85%, so it's not difficult to vote. However, there have been some issues, and the big criticism in Florida is that what are you doing? We had a smooth election in 2020. Well, the issue here is to try to address with some of the issues we saw in other states, particularly Georgia, just across the border, and they're dealing with issues that are pretty easy to understand. And if you talk about those issues instead of using the terms voter suppression and Jim Crow 2.0, it makes it a lot better for people to understand what's going on. I think the three or four major things that this bill does, I really got to think that overwhelming majorities of people would agree with them if they were described to them and the reason for doing them. And the first one is, and we'll go through them, is ballot harvesting. The issue here, and this was against the law in Georgia, and it's against the law in a number of states, but ballot harvesting is where people are allowed to go pick up somebody else's absentee ballot. In other words, if you live in an apartment complex and people can see when you receive your absentee ballot because information is available, they can go knock on your door and say, hey, listen, you got an absentee ballot here. Why don't you fill it out and give it to me, and I'll take it in and turn it in, all right? Well, again, this bill doesn't think that's a good idea. What they think is that you should have to return your own absentee ballot. And if you have some issues, you can get an affidavit that allows a member of your – well, you don't even have to have an affidavit to have a member of your family do it. But you can't have campaign workers or people that are being paid or are volunteering for a campaign to go by and collect an actual ballot. Okay, that's one. Now, look, there may some – people in California don't have a problem with ballot harvesting. They want to try to keep it out of Florida. That's one of the issues. Again, a grand jury in Miami who was investigating vote-by-mail fraud recommended to get rid of ballot harvesting. A grand jury. So the second thing is, one of the things they're doing is they're going to keep drop boxes, which were not even used before the pandemic. But what they're doing is they're making sure that they're secure in the sense that if you're going to outlaw ballot harvesting, you can't just put a drop box out in the middle, distribute them across the voting district, not have one stand there, and just allow people to drop off ballots that you don't know that's tied to them. So that's another issue, and that's related to ballot harvesting. They are going to allow the drop boxes, but they're going to be manned, and there's going to be some ID requirements. Again, if you disagree with that, that's fine, but I don't think that reaches the level of saying that this is voter suppression. I mean, it's a little ridiculous to go down that road. The other thing that they're doing is they are going to require people to request an absentee ballot every 2 years instead of every 4 years. Now, this was an issue that I was sort of split on, but the problem is that people are moving. And they're concerned about the integrity of the absentee ballot request process. And so they've got this in the bill. Well, that's the second thing that the grand jury recommended back in 2014 in Miami-Dade, where they were investigating fraud with vote by mail in the vote by mail process. So again, a second part of this that is being endorsed by a grand jury down in Miami in 2014. Now, one of the things that the grand jury did recommend and they're not doing, and I would have been fine with them doing it, and that was that what's happened is because of technology, it's a lot easier to get data out. And these campaign operatives are using the sunshine laws and the record request policies in the state to get information about voters. In other words, they can get information daily on when someone requests an absentee ballot. And they can also get information on when they turned it in. So what they do is, it used to be you would get the information of when someone requests an absentee ballot, and you would send a piece of mail saying, hey, look, you know, vote for me. But now what's happening is they're actually going to the person's house or the person's apartment. They're tracking this stuff to the degree that they're going there and almost, quote, intercepting the ballot. And so now you can see, with that information and ballot harvesting legal, people can sort of say, all right, look, all these ballots were sent out. Let's go collect them. Let's go get them. Make sure that they fill them out. And so the grand jury had recommended not making this data available. And I would err on that side. This bill does not address that. It allows that data still to be available. And the reasoning there, I believe, is because they are outlawing the ballot harvesting, which in part addresses some of the concerns with the use of that data. But anyway, that's another grand jury recommendation, although it wasn't taken up in this elections bill. Now, what's happened now is everybody's heads have exploded, and they see this as an opportunity to call Republicans racist and supporting the Jim Crow narrative of moving forward with this elections bill. And you've got Nikki Fried, you've got Democratic leaders talking about Jim Crow, basically calling Republicans racist because of these actions. And you know, you've got the League of Women Voters who are suing now, saying that they're making it too difficult for people to vote. Now, look, it's one of the things you can argue. You can argue the issues here, but it's not difficult to vote in the United States now. To say it is, I think is borderline lying, and calling it Jim Crow, I can't imagine why Twitter and Facebook allow these elected officials to actually do that. Given some of the things that they have taken down in response to the COVID pandemic and how people are address that. But, you know, here locally, we've got both Leon County and the city, you know, going to give the election day as a paid holiday. And they're doing this because the city did address this because of, quote, voting suppression bills around the country. Look, the rules were bent during the pandemic, and now the pandemic is close to being over, and we've got to make sure the rules are in place to have the integrity of elections. So anyway, we get back. That's enough on elections. We will turn to the school board. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Big news day. Lots going on. So, the like I said, we just talked about Governor DeSantis signing the elections bill. And I tell you what, it'll be interesting to see the first reporter or the first report you see talking about the elections bill, mentioning the grand jury recommendations in 2014. Now, I will tell you, there was one by Lawrence Maurer in March of this year when it was going through the legislature that talked about that. And we will see if anybody addresses the critiques of this bill, the rhetoric, the Jim Crow rhetoric, the voter suppression rhetoric with, well, wait a minute, you know, some parameters of this bill, the major ones, were recommended by a grand jury who was looking at into voter fraud with the vote-by-mail system in Miami. We'll see if that happens. Anyway, all right, we're going to pivot now locally here to the, as I said earlier, busy week next week, and this is, you know, when you get the agendas out for the meetings next week, we go to work trying to look at what's important, what should we be covering, and we'll have people covering the meetings next week, but the school board will have a meeting on Tuesday. And again, as I've criticized the process at the school board in the past, again, not a process that is new. It's been there for years. And the agenda items lack the robustness of some of the other local government agenda items or agenda processes like the county and the city. But we do go through the meetings. And the thing on the school board, what I wanted to talk about is, you know, there's a, you know, and I talked a little about in the first segment about how impactful education is here. Because of the, well, the number of people involved, 33,000 students, the parents of all those students, 4,500 workers, 2,500 teachers. You know, you see the Tallahassee Greater the Greater Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce trying to get involved in the education system, getting involved in helping out. And so it's, you know, it's a process and a government responsibility that is big in the community. And, you know, we're starting to see, you know, I think the last week we saw this 3-2 vote on the charter school, and I think Superintendent Hanna has been very clear in his positions on charter schools, and I understand that. The state has a different view of that, and so a 3-2 vote, and, you know, there was some criticism of how the superintendent handled that process from one of the board members, which is new. You don't get a lot of debate up there on that dais, but again, a 3-2 vote on a charter school and some criticism of the process. And I think that's healthy because you're getting good back and forth. I don't think anybody is surprised by the position of the majority of people in Leon County on charter schools, although I would argue that it's a little bit more popular than some think. But that is something that, you know, took place at the school board meeting. And, you know, I'm starting to sense that the school board or the school system is, you know, it's a monopoly, or it used to be a monopoly. Charter schools are threatening that. It's providing more competition. And, you know, what happens when you get more competition is you should be more sensitive to the consumers. In this situation, it's the parents and the children. Now, obviously, you can't just acquiesce. A business can't just give, you know, they've got to set some parameters. But they need to become more responsive. And I think that's going to be interesting to watch and to see how the school board deals with that. And part of the thing that you see, and then this is more about process, but I think, you know, the superintendent has a huge job in the sense of trying to get all these trains running on time, trying to get all this coordinated. And we saw, you know, last couple of years when Superintendent Hanna tried to change the busing process, he thought he was doing something good in the sense of trying to make it more efficient. It really blew up. So you don't get rewarded for taking a lot of chances. And a lot of the decisions are left for the schools to make, the principals, who they carry a lot of responsibility in the decisions they make, the teachers they hire, the coaches that they hire, the processes that are in place. And, you know, I guess that can be a good thing from a decentralized approach. I would argue there's got to be some oversight from, you know, the superintendent and the assistant superintendents. And no doubt they set policy and what's going to be followed. But one of the examples I wanted to talk about, and this is something that we're looking into, and it's a touchy issue because anytime you deal with kids and parents and teachers and administrators, I mean, it gets very personal. But there was an investigation out of Childs High School based on some allegations from some students on the football team about how the coaches or the coach out there was treating members of the football team. Now, right away, you get into this he said, she said thing. And this got ratcheted up to the point to where, you know, it got to the district level. And then there was an investigation. It was sort of kicked back down to the school. There was an investigation launched. And, you know, we'll get into the details of that later. But, you know, it seems a little bit awkward that you have the school investigating people that they've hired. They're investigating certain allegations. Because they've hired those people. It would seem like you would have sort of a different group to come in and do this investigation. But there was an investigation and a letter written from Assistant Superintendent Alan Cox after the investigation saying that, look, you know, we investigated these claims. And these claims were by a number of the people on the football team of basically bullying, use of language, actually, you know, putting your hands on some of the football players. And so this investigation basically found that none of this had any merit. And, you know, they tried to use a quote, anonymous survey. But I think that from what I can tell on some of the things that I've seen, some of the kids weren't comfortable because it was asking for your name. They was done at the school. So it wasn't really anonymous, but they used that survey to basically go ahead and claim that, all right, look, we couldn't find anything here, which raises the question. And again, we'll get into the details of what's going on there at a later date, but it raises the question of what is the standard, okay, for saying, okay, we've got a problem. All right, so if you got a football team of 40 people and you got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 students that verify something and the coach or the person who's being alleged to have done this denies it, you know, how do you move past that? And, you know, I've seen this in a number of investigations where people are intimidated. They don't want to give their name because if they give their name and nothing happens, then they're left hung out to dry. So the question is, you know, the only way you really get anything done is if you have documents, you have videos, you have text messages. That's really the only way, because it appears that what kids say, that it's not actionable. And I think that, again, from my experience with dealing with this, if you go through this process of filing complaints with the school and DOE, it looks like the system is really structured to favor those who are already in position. And, you know, that may be a good thing. You've got to have overwhelming evidence to ruin someone's livelihood or to get someone suspended. So maybe that's a good thing. But there's also things about judgment. You know, that you should when you see these concerns and you just blow them away, you just brush them under a rug saying, look, these kids are going to graduate in 2 years and we'll be past this and we'll move on. Or is it something that you log and say, look, there's a pattern of behavior here. And at what point does the pattern of behavior, you know, really draw a question on the credibility of someone that's denying an allegation? And so, you know, I think this is where we are in a lot of this stuff with the school system. And again, it's because it's so bulky and it's so hard to deal with. And again, parents and kids don't want to, you know, they want things to change. But look, these kids have parents, they live in the community. They don't want to be seen as whiners or, you know, as people that are complaining. But at the same time, you know, if there's something that's going on that is, as we say, you know, in a system that impacts the community so forcefully, the education system, you know, it's where kids make friends. It's where kids participate in sports. It's where they get interested in, you know, out-of-school activities. But it is also where they get bullied. It's also where they maybe, you know, get their first emotional trauma in terms of, you know, how they interact with people. And so, I mean, it's a process I think that we don't monitor very well. I don't think there's accountability in a lot of different ways. I think it's the level that you have to cross to get action in our school system seems to be very high. And we may get to the point to where, you know, we report about specifics and things that can change, But right now, I'm talking about the overall process. And it's, you know, what do school board members have the ability to do? I mean, if you're having a problem with a coach and a principal, can you go to a school board member? Can you invite them to a meeting and have them sit in the meeting and see what's going on? Can school board members, you know, tell a principal to say, look, you know, we're getting so many complaints, and I understand you don't have documents, and they've, you know, there's no picture of someone doing this, but it looks like there is a preponderance of evidence here that we need to do something. I mean, when does that happen? And so I think this is all very foreign to parents and how to deal with this process. And I think one of it is because of the transitional nature of school. Again, you get into high school for 4 years. If a principal or a coach can just hold off the allegation of, you know, a couple of kids that will soon be gone, then it's over. And I think that's part of the problem. But I think it's something that needs to change. I think it's something, obviously, that if you're trying to make the consumer happy, if you're trying to provide the best product, you would think it would be something you'd want to address. We're going to see if we can help get to that. And we'll have some more information on this child's investigation into the football coach. They've issued that report in January, but questions remain, a lot of questions. And I don't think that some of these parents that are interested in getting this resolved are going away, but we'll continue to follow it and see what we can find in terms of public records and documents and go from there. All right, when we get back in our last segment, we're going to talk about the Leon County Commission meeting that will be on Tuesday at 3 o'clock. We got about three or four items that we want to get you updated on, so stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. Riding along on this big old jet plane, I've been thinking about my home. But my love light seems so far away. Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home. But it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend you start with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Give them a call at 385-6649. That's 385-6649, and we appreciate their sponsorship. Oh, boy, this the show flew. A lot to talk about. So we're going to end with going back to local stuff here with the Leon County Commission meeting. Their agenda is out, and it's always a long one. Doesn't mean that there's going to be a lot of discussion, but I wanted to just touch on a couple of items that they're going to be dealing with. The first thing is the homelessness meeting. If you remember this whole issue with the homelessness and how it was being handled, with the city commission started trying to deal with it, Commissioner Jerry Matlow kept requesting a meeting with Leon County to try to figure out a solution to this. And there was some blowback or pushback from the mayor and obviously two other city commissioners that wanted to wait into the Big Bend continuum of care did some data analysis and figured out exactly where we were. And so now the Leon County Commission is going to be setting up a meeting with the city, their counterparts, in dealing with this issue. That's up for discussion at their meeting on Tuesday. And so that is something that, you know, as I said, with the pandemic in its waning days, you know, the homeless shelter, the Kearney Center has opened back up. Here on North Monroe, some of the homeless issues have been mitigated. However, you know, it's still a problem, which you know, leads into the affordable housing issue. And so there are going to be some more meetings on that. But this will be a workshop, and it will involve the Big Bend Continuum of Care, which has, I think, members of both the city and the county commission on it to deal with this. Another issue that the county is going to be taking up is giving the day off for employees of the county to vote. This is something that's consistent with what was going on with the city. The county gives their analysis of what's going on. It's going to cost the taxpayers about $18,000 to give county workers the day off for Election Day. Again, I'm not going to, I guess I could rehash what I just said. It's amazing the opportunities that people have to vote, and this is nothing but, I think, again, political theater. We'll see what they have to say, if there's comments on that. Another issue that they're dealing with is they're going through, and the county wants to change how a homeless shelter is defined. So it's the siting of a homeless shelter, because there was some issue, obviously, with City Walk on Mahan. And so they're going to change. They're going to make it a little bit more difficult to become a, quote, homeless shelter. So in other words, I think one of the parameters that they're dealing with is if you provide, just because you provide homeless opportunities during cold weather emergencies, that doesn't mean you suddenly are an official homeless shelter. And so there are different specifics on that. We'll get into that more on Tuesday when they vote on that. But they're going to be dealing with that issue. It's something, again, it took a crisis or an emergency to sort of have this issue come bubbling up. And now, you know, what's supposed to happen in government is you figure out, all right, what's the problem here? This has exposed something that we have not dealt with very well in the past. And so, you know, what you see now is you see the North Monroe board that's created. You see these meetings between the city and the county. And, you know, hopefully they will come up with some resolutions. Again, it's local government, so they work slow. And some of the things they can deal with in a very effective manner. We'll see if this is an issue. This one is a little bit more difficult to deal with than some things. You can't just write a check. You have to put a process in place. I think that's why they have, they've got the Big Bend Continuum of Care involved. I mean, one of the requirements that you're going to have to get some kind of homeless designation is a recommendation letter or at least some analysis by the Big Bend Continuum of Care presented when you apply for this. So they're trying to put up a few more obstacles. A few more stops for someone that wants to provide homeless services. Another report they're going to get in the county commission meeting is a update on the curbside collection service provided by Waste Pro. This is something, if you listen to the radio show or follow Tallahassee Reports, has been a quarterly process since they signed a new contract. Waste Pro had some customer service issues in the county areas for a lot of different reasons. It's a much different product in the county areas than it is in the city. The city requires everyone to have the service. The county, if you want it, you pay for it. And so that provides a little bit more challenge for the waste collection service. But they, when they got the new contract, they agreed to put more people in charge of customer service, and that and they followed that. The county in this report has said that I'll read the quote specifically, as reflected through the reduced liquidated damages, Waste Pro continues to take proactive steps to improve customer service and reduce legitimate complaints. In summary, efforts have been made by Waste Pro since the renewal of the agreement to enhance service delivery. So I think this, again, is something that was put in place by the Leon County Commission, which is providing quite a benefit for these Waste Pro customers. Now, the other thing I wanted to get to was this item on Bainbridge Road, the safety improvements of Old Bainbridge Road and I-10. Real quick, this is up near where it intersects with North Monroe. And what I wanted to talk about was the analysis that they did. They talked about a five-year period that there was a 40% increase in crashes from a previous five-year study, which included 120 crashes. 89 of them occurred during dark or low lighting periods, and 21% occurred on wet pavement. Now, that's so they've got a 40% increase in crashes. The project goal is to address the off-road and rear-end type crashes along the segment of Old Bainbridge Road right before it hits Capitol Circle Northwest. Now, we'll have a story up on this with the map, but I think this is, again, local government working at its best, taking data like this crash data and saying, look, we've got to fix this. And look, they're working with DOT, Florida Department of Transportation, through an agreement. The funding on this is close to $400,000. And so, and it is anticipated to be completed by the end of September 2021. So an upgrade in the transportation infrastructure. So, all right, I'll leave with that grassroots issue there. And we will be back on Tuesday to get you going with all these meetings that will be taking place. So join us then. But until then, have a great weekend. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.